our time. We
Uncaged. Welcome to Topple Uncaged. I'm Steve Topple and you're locked on to the UK's hottest politics and music podcast. Each week, I bring you the rawest takes on the big stories making the news, always joined by a very special guest. Then, I pleasure your mind, body and soul with the freshest, most banging international music going.
Uncaged.
It's calling my name, tried to get me into its game. I say no, no, no way, no fortune, no fate for me.
Oh my gosh, I always have the very most talented artists on this podcast, but this week's guest is an exception to that rule even by my high standards. She is a sublime singer, extremely talented songwriter, fantastic lyricist, and she only directs music videos as well. She has come out this year with several brand new tracks, but all of them equally sublime. It is a real pleasure to have her on the Topple Uncaged podcast. I'm very excited to introduce to Zia Benjamin. Zia, thank you so much for coming on. It is a real treat to have you on here.
Thank you for having me. It's like an honor to be able to talk to you and to talk to all your listeners. Respect. I'm glad you're interested in the movement.
I'm very, very interested. I'm especially interested in what you're doing because you have got out, you're releasing quite a bit of new music this year, but one of the standout tracks at the minute is, of course, Mr. Neverman.
Don't wait, time is slipping away.
We love this in this house. It's absolutely great. It's beautiful, beautiful track. It kind of, when I listened to it, first off, I was like, okay, so it puts me a bit in mind of, it's a bit lover's rock almost, but you've brought it bang up to date. And then sort of two-thirds of the way through, you move into this spoken word section, which kind of has influences of dub running through it. And then we're back into the lover's rock. And what's great about it as well is, my, you've got some attitude in it, girl. Good grief. You're kissing your teeth at one point.
Yes.
And then there's this brilliant...
Sometimes things make you have a kiss of teeth, you know?
And there's this brilliant line where I didn't know whether I want to laugh or be a bit scared, because there's this line where you go, a broken heart and a wild woman is volcanic. And I was just like, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's both. I think I wanted people to laugh and also be scared.
It's great. I love it. It's brilliant. And the video, I mean, it's absolutely fantastic. It's like a sort of short film project where you've got this whole storytelling thread running through it. There's mixtures of cinematography in there. Now, the most amazing thing about Mr. Neverman is you wrote the song, you sung the song, and you directed the video as well. That's just quite a project, Zia, I have to say. I mean, how did the song come about, and then how did it develop into this project where you also directed the video? I mean, you basically did nearly the whole thing.
I can't say I did the whole thing because I have such a beautiful team of just... It's funny to call them a team because it's not really like... It's more like just a circle of creatives that work with me just because they see the vision and are... you know, inspired by the creativity. So I definitely don't want to like say it's all me, you know, but starting with the song, I think some of the best songs, they just come to you, you know, like they flow, and Neverman and No Fame were just like that. So Neverman came about a really kind of weird space in my life where I was in a long relationship. I'd been with this person for years and I thought, like, you know, this is him, like, this is it. I'm gonna get married to this person, we're in love, but it just wasn't right. Like, I was putting up with a lot that I think I shouldn't have been, and I didn't feel like he really saw me, meaning he didn't see everything that I was doing to be with him, everything that I had done, like how much I loved him, how much I was giving to him. At that time, I had met another person who was interested in me. And of course, I was like not interested in this person at all. Mm. So, you know, and that's the cycle, is that you are a lot of the times in love situations, you are running after someone who may not see you, when somebody who does see you is running after you and you're not seeing them. And that is, I think, the kind of funny, that's just the funny way that love is, you know, especially in society nowadays, is where we're always taught to run after people, you know, instead of seeing and being content with people that could probably be better for you, but don't tick all of your boxes, you know? So, I had this absolutely brilliant person interested in me, and I was completely ignoring him and stuck in this very long relationship with this person who was just not good enough, you know? So once I heard the instrumental for Mr. Neverman, like, I was really just singing about that kind of situation. Like, you know, why can't you see me? And I feel like, from when you're in high school, from when you're in prep school, as soon as you learn, as soon as children even learn about the concept of love, you're put in that situation right away. You know, like, you're the nerd. You're like either the nerdy person in class who like loves off the cute girl in class and she doesn't see you. Like, everybody can relate to that. And I've related to that experience at so many different parts of my life. So I was really writing and singing about so many different people in this one song that it's kind of hard sometimes when they're like, what is this song about? I'm like, this song is about love and just always being in love with a person. Like, what is wrong with us? You know? So it's a condition. It's like the human condition. Yeah.
No, absolutely. I think you've kind of, I mean, it's quite a, in some respects, amusing story, but you have hit the nail on the head. I mean, we're conditioned by the system that there should be this sort of Disney fairy tale, as it were, where everything, you should find this one person and love them, whatever. But you're quite right. And quite often it's not right. And I mean, you express it beautifully. I mean, it's a fairly sort of, it's not angry, but it's kind of like, I mean, just kissing your teeth sums it up, really. But it's a wonderfully crafted track. It's absolutely, absolutely brilliant. I love it. And the link will be in the show notes, obviously, to it. What I also love, Zaya, is artists that I can't quite put my finger on, you know? And you are one of these people, because you... Listening to you sing, I'll tell you what it puts me in mind of. I was thinking this before we started speaking. It takes me right back to my childhood, because I grew up in a house that was heavily jazz music was always playing. And you kind of take me back to sort of Billie Holiday, Sarah Vaughan, those kind of classic jazz singers in the way you interpret the lyrics and your vocal delivery. There's also sort of soul elements to the music values and production of your tracks. But then, of course, there's a heavy reggae influence. And you kind of, you bring this all together, like I said, this wonderful jazzy vocal, the sort of soul sensibilities, and then with this underlying reggae feel. I mean, it's very eclectic what you do, and I'm fascinated to know, where did this come from? Is it just sort of a mishmash of your own personal music tastes? Did you grow up in a household where music was diverse? Where's this eclecticism come from in you?
It comes from an entire lifetime of using music as a sanctuary. So I did grow up in a household with very wide and diverse tastes in music. So my mom was an avid listener of reggae. She actually moved to Jamaica inspired by reggae. And she used to play, you know, like Black Uhuru. She used to play Peter Tosh, Bob Marley, obviously, Diana King, all of that, you know? And so that was a big part of my life growing up. But also my dad now used to play like a lot of Sade, Enya, Pavarotti.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I got like, so just listening to that already, like, it's like Chacodimos and Players and Pavarotti, like, those are complete different spectrums of music, and that's what I grew up listening to all the time. And I was obsessed just by myself with, like, Michael Jackson and Madonna and, you know, Sade. Yeah, like, definitely Sade, for sure. So I was always very introverted. I think I was an introvert who really tried to be extroverted. So nobody that knows me will ever think I'm introverted, but that's my nature. And so music was always my way of, like, kind of creating, like, a world that made me feel comfortable, and, like, gave me, like, almost, yeah, it was just like its own world, and I became a character in that music world. And all of these different singers became, like, little parts of the mosaic that was me, you know, and movies too, you know, like Angelina Jolie in different movies, or I'd pick, like, Jessica Rabbit from Who Killed Roger Rabbit, like, just women that I thought were awesome. I would take, like, little parts of them, and I definitely created this mosaic and this person. And Zia, to me, like, I talk about her in the third person, and people always make fun of me, but she is a creation, really, of just these different influences. The reason that you hear jazz a lot in it, it's actually so random, but definitely Jessica Rabbit.
So not Billie Holiday or Sarah Vaughan, no, Jessica Rabbit.
It's funny, because when people compare me to, like, Billie Holiday and, like, Amy, it was Jessica Rabbit. And I just thought she was so cool and so, like, misunderstood and so dope, you know? And then from her, I went and went down the rabbit hole and found, like, Nancy Sinatra, and I found all of that. And then people would be like, oh, you sound like these singers. They'd always compare me to people like Norah Jones or what's her name? Joss Stone. And I thought they were great, but they were just a little too nice for me, right? They were, like, very good girl-ish. And I never related to that. And then one day somebody was like, yo, your voice reminds me so much of this girl, Amy Winehouse. So I was like, okay. So I went and looked her up because I was curious. And I was like, yes, this girl is bad. I got it. You know what I mean? I got it. So I was already, like, kind of down that rabbit hole. And then I found her. And then my ex introduced me to Nina Simone. And I think that one thing about jazz and soul, those singers have this amazing way of communicating pain and communicating, like, the actual, the gut, the stomach feeling of being in love. And I think that they do that in such a raw way that I was immediately pulled to their ability to, like, actually communicate that feeling, like, you know, like, I cried a river over you, like, you need to cry a river over me. Yeah, hell yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they do that in such a, you know, in a real way. And I wanted to bring that into our time for our generation, for Jamaica. I think sometimes Jamaica, like, we're so good. We've been in the past so good at actually communicating that soul finesse and that. But I think we kind of left that a little bit to start trying to communicate other things, which are also beautiful through dancehall and through current reggae. But I wanted to take us back to old time Jamaica, you know, to, like, Gregory Isaacs and those kind of feels where you're getting almost that jazz and soul kind of communication of love, that real gut feeling of being in love. That's what I wanted to bring back to Jamaican music. And I think that's where I stand. And that's my part to play.
And that is exactly what you've done. That's a brilliant summing up, and it is what you are creating, if you like. I'm really interested by the fact that you sort of name-tipped Amy Winehouse, because that is actually who you first put me in mind of when I heard you sing, because I am a huge fan of hers, God rest her soul, and I'm fascinated that you hadn't actually heard of her until someone pointed her out, because you are, and you're quite right, there is, you can tell if a singer's kind of got it or not, can't you? As you say, they have a wonderful way of communicating the words in a way other people can't. I mean, Billie Holiday was especially poignant at doing that, as was Sarah Vaughan, Ella Fitzgerald, and right up to date with Amy Winehouse. And like I say, I mean, you have brought the soul and the jazz back into Jamaican music, absolutely. And you've done it in part a lot with your voice as well, because your voice is fascinating. It's really, really... I'm a trained singer, so I always look at people's music and I go, right, okay, and I get all boring and technical with it, to be honest. But it really interests me, because on your voice is sublime, and on Mr. Neverman you sing in this kind of very rich alto voice, and then if you then compare it to a track like Rudy, you flip it up slightly and you can manage a sort of soprano range.
Rudy ain't got a leap of cash. My Rudy don't need no leap of day. Got me loving all.
You go up extremely high, and what you also do wonderfully is you flip between the sort of the horizontal voice with the sort of tight-lipped kind of talking like this if you were me doing it, and then the vertical voice, which is where you open your mouth and it comes booming out. You have the most versatile voice, and it works so well, and it lends itself to both Mr. Neverman and Rudy extremely well. I mean, have you always sung like that? Were you singing growing up, and has your voice developed over time, or has it been a constant, this wonderful way of interpreting words that you are able to do?
I always think it's really interesting when people break down my voice and say it's like amazing and stuff, because I do think it's unique, but something that I've had to like, it's still something I'm learning to be proud of. Meaning, for a very long time, I had a voice that people didn't understand. So, I never had that gospel voice. I never had that Beyonce thing. Like, I never was that kind of singer, but I always liked to sing. And I didn't study any music instruments or anything like that. So what I always say is that I'm a poet, you know, like I've always written. Like I just always found myself just singing the second anybody leaves the house, but I would never sing when there are people in the house. Because I was so shy and so completely like my mom didn't hear me sing for a long time. Like unless it was either you're on stage, in which case I would sing, but I was shaking like a leaf, or I was in my house alone and then I'm like a superstar, you know? But I think sometimes people try to become things that they're not, and it's like sometimes you have to think about what you do when you're alone. And even if what you do when you're alone scares the crap out of you, maybe you should try to push yourself in that direction anyways, right? So it did. It scared the crap out of me. And I honestly didn't think I was that freaking amazing of a singer, to be honest. But apparently people think I am. So it's cool, you know? I don't sing to be a good singer. Like, I just sing to communicate what's in my head. And I don't really understand necessarily what I'm doing all the time. I just do it. You know, I do know that I'm like, I was in the choir, so I do know some of the technicals. Like, I know that I have a good soprano range, even though I don't use it. I prefer to sing in alto because that's just like in the voice in my head is alto, even though my actual voice is soprano, I think. But I've never really had like vocal training like that either. So, yeah, I'm not a musician, to be honest. I'm a poet who can sing, as I said. Like, I'm just singing.
I'd beg to differ on that, but anyway.
I like my voice, though. Don't get it, like, twisted. Like, I'm not trying to, like, be like, you know, I can't sing. I don't have a good voice. Like, I rate my voice, too. I think we need it.
good. No, it is. And do you know what? I think it's because it's natural. That's why. Because there are so many, singers out there who've been trained and gone to either sort of the stage school route or the musical lessons, and there's always something not quite right. There's something missing. But what you've got, because it's natural and because you are literally being who you are, and as you say, you're doing the things that you'd do alone in your bedroom, even though it scares the crap out of you. I think that's what makes your voice so special and so powerful, but so natural. It's a wonder of nature. There we go. That's the best way of describing it. It really is. It's beautiful. It is, and we're kind of back to the Amy Winehouse analogy again, because she was very similar to you, really, isn't it? I mean, she had no training, she had no lessons as such. She just sung how she felt. And the result was perfection, obviously. Speaking of and sort of singing how you feel and the music more broadly, much of your music has been collaborating with, I mean, you've had a musical partnership with him, really, is legendary reggae producer Rory Stone Love. How did this come about? Because he's kind of present on a lot of your tracks, isn't he? How did you hook up with him?
So another musician, Makita Beckford, she sings a song called Jamaican Boy. And she's recently on the Christina Aguilera album. So she said, you know, to me at a party, and she's like, hey, I think that you should meet Rory from Stone Love. I think that he would be a good sound. And at that time, I'd kind of taken a break from music because just the industry, like there's a big difference between doing music and dealing with the music industry. And I was getting a bit frustrated with the music industry side of things. So I'd taken a little bit of a break and stepped back, and I started working in film and documentary production and stuff in that time. But she said, you know, I wanted to meet this guy. So I said, okay, fine, I'll come. Bye. And I went to his studio, and he really was wondering what the hell she's doing bringing me into the studio in the first place. Like, he was super unimpressed. I don't think he gets many people like me walking into his doors. And he's Mr. Black Dub, so.
Exactly.
So he's like, you know, who are you and what are you doing in my studio? And I just started singing. I played him some music, and he was like, okay, I don't need to. He stopped me after like the first couple sentences. He's like, I don't need to hear anymore. I understand, I guess it's, and I took a chance, and I think he took a chance as well, and that's what's really beautiful about our friendship, is that it's super unlikely, but it's such an amazing combination, and we've become just more than producer and artist. Like, he's become one of my very, very close friends, like my big brother. He's become such a mentor to me in this industry, and like always looking out for me and stuff, you know? So I really, I rate him. Yes. Even though he's tough. He's not an easy person to work with. If you know Rory, like Rory has a very sharp wit and also does not mince words. And if your voice is not amazing, he's not recording you. So yeah, he also does not use auto-tune and all of that kind of stuff. So if you think that you're gonna go in there and sing something and they're gonna pretty it up, it's not gonna happen at all.
It's brilliant.
It's not gonna happen. He also doesn't like want you to do like 10 billion takes of something. Like if you come in, you sing the full song and it doesn't sound good, you better come back another day and sing it again. It's real. But what it is that then the beautiful thing is that at that stage in my career now, I said, it was actually the perfect place to be at that stage in my career, because it's like, yo, if you want to be a real artist, this is the time to be a real artist. Otherwise, go home and go and do film and don't bother, right? And it was exactly what I needed at that time, because he was that perfect mix of listening to me, listening to the fact that I have lyrics. Because a lot of producers want to do some popular songs and some fun songs and cute songs. And I'm a cute girl, so they want to package the cute songs with a cute girl. But I'm all about lyrics. As I said, I'm a poet, right? So I remember one of my first sessions with him, I sang some stuff, and he looked at me, and he's like, he stopped the session. He's like, yo, you're like the female John Lennon. And I was like, what? Yeah, I was like, what? And he's like, yo, your lyrics are so good. I just wanted to stop and tell you, like, your lyrics are really good. And I was like, from him to that? Like, I felt so emotional. I was just like, yes, finally, somebody that, like, recognizes the lyrics and isn't just, like, trying to make me some pop star. You know, I was just really bored with a lot of what people were just trying to, the direction people were trying to get me to go in.
Well, it's worked perfectly. I mean, and it shows you have such a good relationship with him through the music. This is your toilet break warning. If you want to go and get yourself a tea, coffee, anything else, or just pop to the loo, then do so now, because me and Zia will be back in a few seconds. Oh my gosh, I always have the very most talented artists on this podcast, but this week's guest is an exception to that rule, even by my high standards. She is a sublime singer, extremely talented songwriter, fantastic lyricist, and she only directs music videos as well. She has come out this year with several brand new tracks, but all of them equally sublime. It is a real pleasure to have her on the Top Lung Cage podcast. I'm very excited to introduce to Zia Benjamin. Zia, thank you so much for coming on. It is a real treat to have you on here.
Thank you for having me. It's like an honor to be able to talk to you and to talk to all your listeners. Respect. I'm glad you're interested in the movement.
I'm very, very interested. I'm especially interested in what you're doing, because you have got out, well, you're releasing quite a bit of new music this year, but one of the standout tracks at the minute is, of course, Mr. Neverman.
Don't wait, time is slipping away.
We love this in this house. It's absolutely great. It's beautiful, beautiful track. It kind of, when I listened to it, first off, I was like, okay, so it puts me a bit in mind of, it's a bit lover's rock almost, but you've brought it bang up to date. And then sort of two thirds of the way through, you move into this spoken word section, which kind of has influences of dub running through it. And then we're back into the lover's rock. And what's great about it as well is, my, you've got some attitude in it, girl. Good grief. You're kissing your teeth at one point.
Yes.
And then there's this brilliant...
Sometimes things make you have a kiss of teeth, you know?
And there's this brilliant line where I didn't know whether I want to laugh or be a bit scared, because there's this line where you go, a broken heart and a wild woman is volcanic. And I was just like, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's both. I think I wanted people to laugh and also be scared.
It's great. I love it. It's brilliant. And the video, I mean, it's absolutely fantastic. It's like a sort of short film project where you've got this whole storytelling thread running through it. There's mixtures of cinematography in there. Now, the most amazing thing about Mr. Neverman is you wrote the song, you sung the song, and you directed the video as well. That's just quite a project, I have to say. I mean, how did the song come about, and then how did it develop into this project where you also directed the video? I mean, you basically did nearly the whole thing.
I can't say I did the whole thing, because I have such a beautiful team of just... It's funny to call them a team, because it's not really like... It's more like just a circle of creatives that work with me just because they see the vision and are... you know, inspired by the creativity. So I definitely don't want to like say it's all me, you know, but starting with the song, I think some of the best songs, they just come to you, you know, like they flow. And Neverman and No Fame were just like that. So Neverman came about a really kind of weird space in my life where I was in a long relationship. I had been with this person for years, and I thought, like, you know, this is him, like, this is it. I'm gonna get married to this person, we're in love, but it just wasn't right. Like, I was putting up with a lot that I think I shouldn't have been, and I didn't feel like he really saw me, meaning he didn't see everything that I was doing to be with him, everything that I had done, like how much I loved him, how much I was giving to him. At that time, I had met another person who was interested in me. And of course, I was like not interested in this person at all. So, you know, and that's the cycle, is that you are a lot of the times in love situations, you are running after someone who may not see you, when somebody who does see you is running after you and you're not seeing them. And that is, I think, the kind of funny, that's just the funny way that love is, you know, especially in society nowadays, is where we're always taught to run after people, you know, instead of seeing and being content with people that could probably be better for you, but don't tick all of your boxes, you know? So, I had this absolutely brilliant person interested in me, and I was completely ignoring him and stuck in this very long relationship with this person who was just not good enough, you know? So once I heard the instrumental for Mr. Neverman, like, I was really just singing about that kind of situation. Like, you know, why can't you see me? And I feel like, from when you're in high school, from when you're in prep school, as soon as you learn, as soon as children even learn about the concept of love, you're put in that situation right away. You know, like, you're the nerd. You're like either the nerdy person in class who like loves off the cute girl in class and she doesn't see you. Like, everybody can relate to that. And I've related to that experience at so many different parts of my life. So I was really writing and singing about so many different people in this one song that it's kind of hard sometimes when they're like, what is this song about? I'm like, this song is about love and just always being in love with a person. Like, what is wrong with us? You know? So it's a condition. It's like the human condition. Yeah.
No, absolutely. I think you've kind of, I mean, it's quite a, in some respects, amusing story, but you have hit the nail on the head. I mean, we're conditioned by the system that there should be this sort of Disney fairy tale, as it were, where everything, you should find this one person and love them, whatever. And but you're quite right. And quite often it's not right. And I mean, you express it beautifully. I mean, it's a fairly sort of, it's not angry, but it's kind of like, I mean, just kissing your teeth sums it up, really. And it's a wonderfully crafted track. It's absolutely, absolutely brilliant. I love it. And the link will be in the show notes, obviously, to it. What I also love, Zaya, is artists that I can't quite put my finger on, you know. And you are one of these people, because you, listening to you sing, I'll tell you what it puts me in mind of. I was thinking this before we started speaking. It takes me right back to my childhood, because I grew up in a house that was heavily, jazz music was always playing. And you kind of take me back to sort of Billie Holiday, Sarah Vaughan, those kind of classic jazz singers in the way you interpret the lyrics and your vocal delivery. There's also sort of soul elements to the music values and production of your tracks, but then of course there's a heavy reggae influence, and you bring this all together. Like I said, it's wonderful jazzy vocal, the sort of soul sensibilities, and then with this underlying reggae feel. I mean, it's very eclectic what you do, and I'm fascinated to know, where did this come from? Is it just sort of a mishmash of your own personal music tastes? Did you grow up in a household where music was diverse? Where's this eclecticism come from in you?
It comes from an entire lifetime of using music as a sanctuary. So I did grow up in a household with very wide and diverse tastes in music. So my mom was an avid listener of reggae. She actually moved to Jamaica inspired by reggae. Right. And she used to play, you know, like Black Uhuru. She used to play Peter Tosh, Bob Marley, obviously, Diana King, all of that, you know? And so that was a big part of my life growing up. But also my dad now used to play like a lot of Sade, Enya, Pavarotti.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I got like, so just listening to that already, like, it's like Chacodimos and Playas and Pavarotti, like, those are complete different spectrums of music, and that's what I grew up listening to all the time. And I was obsessed just by myself with, like, Michael Jackson and Madonna and, you know, Sade. Yeah, like, definitely Sade, for sure. So I was always very introverted. I think I was an introvert who really tried to be extroverted. So nobody that knows me will ever think I'm introverted, but that's my nature. And so music was always my way of, like, kind of creating, like, a world that made me feel comfortable, and, like, gave me, like, almost, yeah, it was just like its own world, and I became a character in that music world. And all of these different singers became, like, little parts of the mosaic that was me, you know, and movies too, you know, like Angelina Jolie in different movies, or I'd pick, like, Jessica Rabbit from Who Killed Roger Rabbit, like, just women that I thought were awesome. I would take, like, little parts of them, and I definitely created this mosaic and this person. And Zia, to me, like, I talk about her in the third person, and people always make fun of me, but she is a creation, really, of just these different influences. The reason that you hear jazz a lot in it, it's actually so random, but definitely Jessica Rabbit.
Roger Rabbit. So not Billie Holiday or Sarah Vaughan, no, Jessica Rabbit.
It's funny because when people, like, people compare me to, like, Billie Holiday and, like, Amy, it was Jessica Rabbit. And she, I just thought she was so cool and so, like, misunderstood and so dope, you know? And then from her, I went and went down the rabbit hole and found, like, Nancy Sinatra, and I found all of that. And then people would be like, oh, you sound like these singers. They'd always compare me to people like Norah Jones or what's her name? Joss Stone. And I thought they were great, but they were just a little too nice for me, right? They were, like, very good girl-ish, and I never related to that. And then one day somebody was like, yo, your voice reminds me so much of this girl, Amy Winehouse. So I was like, okay. So I went and looked her up because I was curious, and I was like, yes, this girl is bad. I got it. You know what I mean? I got it. So I was already, like, kind of down that rabbit hole, and then I found her, and then my ex introduced me to Nina Simone, and I think that one thing about jazz and soul, those singers have this amazing way of communicating pain and communicating, like, the actual, the gut, the stomach feeling of being in love. And I think that they do that in such a raw way that I was immediately pulled to their ability to, like, actually communicate that feeling. Like, you know, like, I cried a river over you. Like, you need to cry a river over me. Yeah, hell yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they do that in such a, you know, in a real way. And I wanted to bring that into our time for our generation, for Jamaica. I think sometimes Jamaica, like, we're so good. We have been in the past so good at actually communicating that soulfulness and that. But I think we kind of left that a little bit to start trying to communicate other things, which are also beautiful through dancehall and through current reggae. But I wanted to take us back to old time Jamaica, you know, so like Gregory Isaacs and those kind of feels where you're getting almost that jazz and soul kind of communication of love, that real gut feeling of being in love. That's what I wanted to bring back to Jamaican music. And I think that's where I stand. And that's my part to play.
And that is exactly what you've done. That's a brilliant summing up, and it is what you are creating, if you like. I'm really interested by the fact that you sort of name-tipped Amy Winehouse, because that is actually who you first put me in mind of when I heard you sing, because I am a huge fan of hers, God rest her soul, and I'm fascinated that you hadn't actually heard of her until someone pointed her out, because you are, and you're quite right, there is you can tell if a singer's kind of got it or not, can't you? As you say, they have a wonderful way of communicating the words in a way other people can't. I mean, Billie Holiday was especially poignant at doing that, as was Sarah Vaughan, Ella Fitzgerald, and right up to date with Amy Winehouse. And like I say, I mean, you have brought the soul and the jazz back into Jamaican music, absolutely. And you've done it in part a lot with your voice as well, because your voice is fascinating. It's really, really... I'm a trained singer, so I always look at people's music and I go, right, okay, and I get all boring and technical with it, to be honest. But it really interests me, because on your voice is sublime, and on Mr. Neverman you sing in this kind of very rich alto voice, and then if you then compare it to a track like Rudy, you flip it up slightly and you can manage a sort of soprano range.
Rudy ain't got a leap of cash. My Rudy don't need no leap of day. Got me laughing.
You go up extremely high, and what you also do wonderfully is you flip between the sort of the horizontal voice with the sort of tight-lipped kind of talking like this if you were me doing it, and then the vertical voice, which is where you open your mouth and it comes booming out. You have the most versatile voice, and it works so well, and it lends itself to both Mr. Neverman and Rudy extremely well. I mean, have you always sung like that? Were you singing growing up, and has your voice developed over time, or has it been a constant, this wonderful way of interpreting words that you are able to do?
I always think it's really interesting when people break down my voice and say it's like amazing and stuff, because I do think it's unique, but something that I've had to like, it's still something I'm learning to be proud of. Meaning, for a very long time, I had a voice that people didn't understand. So, I never had that gospel voice. I never had that Beyonce thing. Like, I never was that kind of singer, but I always liked to sing. And I didn't study any music instruments or anything like that. So what I always say is that I'm a poet, you know, like I've always written. Like I just always found myself just singing the second anybody leaves the house, but I would never sing when there are people in the house. Because I was so shy and so completely like my mom didn't hear me sing for a long time. Like unless it was either you're on stage, in which case I would sing, but I was shaking like a leaf, or I was in my house alone and then I'm like a superstar, you know? But I think sometimes people try to become things that they're not, and it's like sometimes you have to think about what you do when you're alone. And even if what you do when you're alone scares the crap out of you, maybe you should try to push yourself in that direction anyways, right? So it did. It scared the crap out of me. And I honestly didn't think I was that freaking amazing of a singer, to be honest. But apparently people think I am. So it's cool, you know? I don't sing to be a good singer. Like, I just sing to communicate what's in my head. And I don't really understand necessarily what I'm doing all the time. I just do it. You know, I do know that I'm like, I was in the choir, so I do know some of the technicals. Like, I know that I have a good soprano range, even though I don't use it. I prefer to sing in alto because that's just like in the voice in my head is alto, even though my actual voice is soprano, I think. But I've never really had like vocal training like that either. So, yeah, I'm not a musician, to be honest. I'm a poet who can sing, as I said. Like, I'm just singing.
I'd beg to differ on that, but anyway.
I like my voice, though. Don't get it, like, twisted. Like, I'm not trying to, like, be like, you know, I can't sing. I don't have a good voice. Like, I rate my voice, too. I think we need it.
Good. No, it is. And do you know what? I think it's because it's natural. That's why. Because there are so many singers out there who've been trained and gone to either sort of the stage school route or the musical lessons. And there's always something not quite right. There's something missing. And what you've got, because it's natural and because you are literally being who you are. And as you say, you're doing the things that you'd do alone in your bedroom, even though it scares the crap out of you. I think that's what makes your voice so special and so powerful but so natural. It's a wonder of nature. There we go. That's the best way of describing it. It really is. It's beautiful. It is. And we're kind of back to the Amy Winehouse analogy again, because she was very similar to you, really, isn't it? I mean, she had no training. She had no lessons as such. She just sung how she felt. And the result was perfection, obviously. Speaking of sort of singing how you feel and the music more broadly, much of your music has been collaborating with, I mean, you've had a musical partnership with him, really, is legendary reggae producer Rory Stone Love. How did this come about? Because he's kind of present on a lot of your tracks, isn't he? How did you hook up with him?
Another musician, Makita Beckford, she sings a song called Jamaican Boy. And she's recently on the Christina Aguilera album. So she said, you know, to me at a party, and she's like, hey, I think that you should meet Rory from Stone Love. I think that he would be a good sound. And at that time, I'd kind of taken a break from music because just the industry, like there's a big difference between doing music and dealing with the music industry. And I was getting a bit frustrated with the music industry side of things, so I'd taken a little bit of a break and stepped back, and I started working in film and documentary production and stuff in that time. But she said, you know, I wanted to meet this guy. So I said, okay, fine, I'll come. Bye. And I went to his studio, and he really was wondering what the hell she's doing bringing me into the studio in the first place. Like, he was super unimpressed. I don't think he gets many people like me walking into his doors. And he's Mr. Black Dub, so.
Exactly.
So he's like, you know, who are you and what are you doing in my studio? And I just started singing. I played him some music, and he was like, okay, I don't need to. He stopped me after, like, the first couple sentences. He's like, I don't need to hear anymore. I understand, I get it. And I took a chance, and I think he took a chance as well. And that's what's really beautiful about our friendship, is that it's super unlikely, but it's such an amazing combination. And we've become just more than producer and artist. Like, he's become one of my very, very close friends, like my big brother. He's become such a mentor to me in this industry and, like, always looking out for me and stuff, you know? So I rate him. Yes, even though he's tough. He's not an easy person to work with. If you know Rory, like, Rory has a very sharp wit and also does not mince words. And if your voice is not amazing, he's not recording you. So yeah, he also does not use auto-tune and all of that kind of stuff. So if you think that you're gonna go in there and sing something and they're gonna pretty it up, it's not gonna happen at all.
I love that. It's brilliant.
It's not gonna happen. He also doesn't like want you to do like 10 billion takes of something. Like, if you come in, you sing the full song and it doesn't sound good, you better come back another day and sing it again. like it's real. But what it is that then the beautiful thing is that at that stage in my career now, I said, it's like, it was actually the perfect place to be at that stage in my career, because it's like, if you want to be a real artist, this is the time to be a real artist. Otherwise, go home and go and do film and don't bother, right? And it was exactly what I needed at that time, because he was that perfect mix of listening to me, listening to the fact that I have lyrics. Because a lot of producers want to do some popular songs and some fun songs and cute songs. And I'm a cute girl, so they want to package the cute songs with a cute girl. But I'm all about lyrics. As I said, I'm a poet, right? So I remember one of my first sessions with him, I sang some stuff, and he looked at me and he's like, he stopped the session. He's like, yo, you're like the female John Lennon. And I was like, what? Yeah, I was like, what? And he's like, yo, your lyrics are so good. I just wanted to stop and tell you, like, your lyrics are really good. And I was like, from him to that? Like, I felt so emotional. I was just like, yes, finally, somebody that, like, recognizes the lyrics and isn't just, like, trying to make me some pop star. You know, I was just really bored with a lot of what people were just trying to, the direction people are trying to get me to go in.
Well, it's worked perfectly. I mean, and it shows you have such a good relationship with him through the music. You are a brilliant lyricist, and that kind of leads me into what I wanted to talk about next, because you I was going to try and dress this up, but I'm not going to dress it up. No Fame. Lyrically superb. It is a brilliant takedown of the music industry and the sort of the toxicity of it, I guess, is the best word to sum it up. I mean, it's a brilliant song, but lyrically it's I want to say it's delicious, because it is delicious. It's a masterful piece of writing. But it interested me because you kind of broke onto the scene, as it were, the Sean Paul in, it was 2011, wasn't it, when it was Standing Here, wasn't it? And so you broke in with, I mean, he's in the UK, he's only really known as a fairly mainstream artist, so you broke through with someone who would be considered a big global superstar, and then you came back with this sort of damning critique of the music industry in itself. I mean, tell me if you don't want to answer my question, it's fine. But did something happen that sort of made you go, nah, I don't want to get involved with this, the music industry as it is? Or is it just your personal reflections on what you've seen from the sort of corporate music industry?
A lot of things happened. And it's funny because I was probably the wrong person to mess with, to be honest, because I studied journalism, right?
Did you?
Yeah, I studied journalism, and before I started, I didn't even consider really doing music when I was doing those songs. Like, I was just singing. I was a journalist, and I've always been a rebel, and I've always been a champion of people who don't feel comfortable speaking and telling their stories. So when I was a journalist, which I still consider myself to be a journalist, actually, just in music, but I did stories on, like, you know, the genocide in Darfur. I interviewed people from the Nuba Mountains. I, like, interviewed refugees. I interviewed people who were human trafficked and working at strip clubs. Like, I did that, you know what I mean? And then it's funny because I have this, like, little, like, big smile and cute face, but I'm a journalist. So maybe they didn't realize what they were getting, you know, because I look very unassuming and I'm a very humble person, but that don't mean, you know what I mean? So so then the Sean Paul opportunity kind of got the ball rolling really quickly for me. And within, like, maybe 2 months of that song, I was already being offered record label contracts. I was branding opportunities under, like, basically, like, but at that stage, because I'm not a known artist, I'm just an opportunity that they see, you know, Sean let people see me. So they see pretty girl, nice-ish voice, can sing pop, and they say, okay, we can build her. So it's not like they really liked me, they just wanted to build me into something that they could market. Now, the problem with that is that if people don't really respect you as an artist, they just see you as a product, then they don't treat you with respect, right? And that's a problem that a lot of female artists get into, is that they feel in order to get a bus that they have to be packaged in a certain way, and they become more products than artists a lot of the time, right? And they don't get treated with respect. So I definitely had, like, a lot of disrespect. You know, I got offered by a huge music exec. Like, he, like, invited me back to his hotel room and told me that he could like make me a huge star, you know. That like very, it's so funny because it's like such a very stereotypical, almost like straight out of a movie. Like it's like so dumb, you know what I mean? It's so like tacky and cliche and kitsch.
You kind of think, yeah, you kind of think it's from Hollywood and it doesn't really happen, don't you?
It's straight out of Hollywood. It's like, oh, the hotel audition. Like, please, come on. You know, like, stuff like that, right? And I, like, I've definitely gone into, like, a producer, like, big producer, and he's, like, suddenly has his hand on my lap, and I'm just like, are you mad? And that's, and then I realize, like, that's me. Like, I am a woman who is educated. I don't carry myself in a way that I think, you know, is inviting. If I'm experiencing this, I can just imagine the girl who wants to sing who comes from Ghetto, or I can just imagine the girl who is 16 who wants to sing. I can just imagine the girl who didn't go to high university that wants to sing. Like, what are they going through? And it made me angry. Like, it made me so angry because I'm like, if I am going through this kind of disrespect, then definitely other girls are going through worse. And I know that. And then I ended up on a trip with a bunch of other female artists, and I brought it up a little quietly, and I was blown away by how many stories I had. You know, like, even girls who are, like, legacy artists where their parents have been in music, like, you think that they're not going to be disrespected. You know, I have heard stories about producers saying, yo, if you don't do this, you better come out of my car, and they drop the girl off in the middle of nowhere, and she have to walk in her high heels and call a taxi with no money. You know, and this is somebody who's respected. Her parents are respected in music. Like, it's ridiculous what female artists have to go through, not only in this country, around the world, right? Yeah. So for me, No Fame, it's like, it was my experiences. It was that, and just also just BS that I had to go through, even from just being a young woman in music. Like, I think it's really funny how I find it hip-hop and EDM and a lot of those things, like, they, like, will use your voice and then not, like, I just think of all of these things where, like, women are the hooks of big songs, and they're the part that makes the song special, but then they don't, you don't ever find out who that chick is, and nobody thinks to even ask. Like, nobody asks. It's not even the fact that they don't give, the creators don't give the woman credit. It's the fact that the fans, I don't like the word fans, but the listeners don't ask who that is, right? Because we're so conditioned to think that that voice is just something. It's just a product. But that voice is a person. So I was just like, this is ridiculous. This is all ridiculous. This is all stupid. Like, I can't be a part of this. And I was like, if I'm wasting my intellect on this kind of BS, like, I'm out of it. I'm going to go and tell people stories, and I'm going to go back to journalism, which is what I did for a couple of years, which is why you have that big gap in musical releases. Because I went back into journalism, and I'm proud of it. I did some amazing work, and I'm happy I did that. When I met Rory, it was, I think, the universe or the divine intervening. Because I think when you are given a talent or a gift, if you are supposed to influence people, and you're given, everybody's given gifts because their gifts are there for them to influence and change the world. Like, that's what you're given the gifts for. So I think that when you're given a gift, no matter how hard you try to run, it will always find you. And I tried to run from the music industry, but it was always knocking on my door. So Rory was that inescapable, like, well, here's a sanctuary so that you can create sanctuary for people with your music, so that you can go back to music being a sanctuary for yourself. Because it wasn't for me at that point anymore. It was a product, and it was weird. So Rory created that safe zone again, and allowed me to be intellectual in my music, allowed me to sing the lyrics I wanted to sing with the depth that I wanted to sing them, cared about my voice, didn't want to just slap some autotune on it and make me sound like somebody else. Like, yeah, so he really opened that door. And then from that, I knew it. I knew that just as soon as I can put out songs that I actually wanted to, that the producers that I need to work with would come. And that's what happened when No Fame went out, is that I finally got to put out my voice the way that I wanted it to sound, with some lyrics that made sense, kind of. And then producers that were attracted to that kind of substance came. And now I have better producers to work with. And, you know, like, it's amazing. It's been a great journey since then. Yeah. And I'm definitely not, like, making mad. Like, I'm not making those numbers. I'm not making 100 million views or anything like that. But it's just a lot more fulfilling of a journey, and it's a lot more real to me. So it's cool.
And that's what's important, especially with music. I mean, it's a polar opposite for me, really, because I trained as a musician, and that's kind of what I always wanted to do. And then I accidentally fell into journalism. It was kind of the other way around. I never intended to be a journalist. I never crossed my mind in my life. But certain sort of, as you say, divine forces came together. And they do that in life. I'm a strong believer in that. And it's obviously, it has happened with you, and it was meant to be. And now, as you say, it's not, and so many artists I speak to say that it's not about the number of hits, it's not about the number of clicks, it's about the fact that they can be free to express themselves in the way that they want to express themselves. And as you said, what Rory gives you, that kind of safe zone for you to be able to do what you want to do. And it shines through that you're at a very good place with it now. And what's also happened sort of consequently is you've come back at a time when the kind of whole revival roots movement is really on fire at the minute. I mean, you've got the likes of Protégé and Kabaka Pyramid and Coffee all blowing up in a major way, and then under the surface you've got some absolutely stunning artists, as we spoke about off air, people like Black Hero, King Mass. I had Ray Nicole, another beautiful singer, on a few weeks ago. There's a real the movement seems invigorated at the moment, and it's so diverse as well. That's what I love about it, and love about artists like you and lots of the other ones I speak to. Musically, they're so diverse. It's always fascinating musically to listen to them, and lyrically as well. And it must be a great time to have then just come back to music generally, with the revival movement going how it's going, to be part of that now in 2019. Mm. That must be brilliant, no?
Definitely. Being in Jamaica right now, it excites me beyond words, because I'm just so proud of what we're doing as a country, even if the world may not necessarily see it, but yet, like, they see some things, but they don't see it, because there's so much bubbling in Jamaica. It's incredible. But it's really funny, because people talk about the reggae revival movement. I actually... And this is maybe the nerdy journalist side of me coming through, but I think that there's another movement that I think people are kind of like seeing it a little bit, but they're trying to combine it with the reggae revival movement, and I think it's its own thing, right? I think the movement of female artists in Jamaica, it's reggae revival, but that is something different, and that is something so special, because if you look at it, a movement like this that's happening in Jamaica, I haven't even seen that in hip-hop. I don't see that in pop. I don't see that in any other genre in any country. Just the way that we as women have grouped together and are supporting each other and are really standing by each other, are collaborating with each other, are on stage with each other. Like, it's funny, because that's something that men do in hip-hop, in pop. That's something that men do. Women don't do that, because by culturally we are taught to see each other as competition, to tear each other down, to take. There can be only one queen. There can be only one queen of hip-hop. You have that with Cardi B and Nicki Minaj right now. There can be only one. Who is the one? Why can there only be one? So it's funny, because we have this bubbling momentum of a female movement that is completely challenging everything that we have been taught about women in music and women in culture. And I don't think that people see it, because I'm like, people need to be pointing this out, because it's not just reggae revival. This is like some like revolution or something, you know, like this is something really special. Really, really, really special from an outsider perspective. And it's not just going to affect the women in music, because it will affect us in the sense that we are no longer taking the BS. If we support each other, then people cannot just take advantage of us. But also, it changes the sound and the culture of the country and the culture of the countries that Jamaica influences. So if you put more females on the radio, immediately the conversation changes, right? And that's what's happening. Slowly but surely, you're hearing coffee coming out of Jamaica. When is the last time you heard a female artist come out of Jamaica to like that? And what she's talking about, gratitude is a must. When is the last time you heard that? It's so special. And if the more female artists that come out to Jamaica and come out with their unique music, as opposed to singing what they're told to sing or packaging it how they're supposed to be packaging it, if they feel more comfortable being able to express themselves, it's not going to just change Jamaica. It's going to change the entire world. I kid you not, that's going to have some Bob Marley momentum behind it. So that's what, yeah. we need a name for this movement. Like I've been like meditating, like we need a name, because it can't just be called reggae revival. This is something else. This is something really special, for sure.
I'm just going to drop the mic on your behalf. Wow. Bloody hell. Okay. That brilliant analysis, absolutely. You can tell you're a journalist and a musician. There's just a sensational analysis there. And yeah, I'm going to put my hands up. No, of course, that I hadn't even considered it in those terms. But yeah, now when you look at what is happening and the way that, as you say, women are coming together and working together, but also it's a change in dynamic as well, isn't it? Especially as you say, Jamaica, but also the cultures it influences. It's a cultural change, having women to the fore, and as you say, not just as music industry objects who are packages. That's fascinating, really, 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 really interesting, really important narrative as well. If you want to dip back into journalism, you should write something about that, because it's really, no, I'm being serious, it's really interesting.
I've thought about it, to be honest. Like I've really thought about, because I'm looking at the journalists that come to Jamaica and I'm just like, how are you not seeing this? Like, you guys are trying to not you specifically, but I just see the stories coming out of Jamaica, and I see like the same kind of story, like it's the same kind of stories, but there is a story here that is not just about Jamaica or reggae. It's about literally a complete shift in how women are working together in music, in an arena. Music for women has always been the gladiator field. It's always been only one person wins, right? It's been that a lot. Okay, maybe I shouldn't say always been, but we're definitely like pushed in that direction, you know?
So, sorry to interrupt you, but no, you're right, it has been like that. So there's always the Queen of Soul was Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Pop was, there's always a queen, as you pointed out, there's always a queen of something. And if it's not one queen, then people disagree over which queen it is. So is the Queen of Pop Madonna? Is the Queen of Pop Mariah Carey? Is the Queen of R&B Whitney? And you're right. And that obviously, That's not organic either. That comes from the industry, I would assume, to pit women artists against each other.
Divide and conquer. Divide and conquer.
It's exactly what it is. You're on the money. On the money. I mean, I'm going to put my script and just throw it over there. I mean, do you think this, as you say, movement of women, which there isn't been given a name to yet, Why has this come about? Is it a response to sort of culture in Jamaica, or is it a response to the music industry, or is it a combination of all these factors, do you think?
I've been asking myself why it's coming about now. I think that maybe women are just waking up to the fact that we've been played a little bit. Like, we're maybe waking up to the fact that if we don't support each other, we'll always be not supported. We'll always be, you know, if we don't create our own narrative, the narrative will always be written by men. Within my own just friend group, like, I know that it just so happens, and maybe it's just divine. I think sometimes movements come around just by divine timing. I think it's sometimes just the universe, like, this is what, I think if a message needs to go out, it's going to go out. And sometimes it is channeled through various different vessels at the same time, you know? So I think that's what it is. I think just worldwide, people are becoming a lot more spiritual. People are starting to ask questions. They're not just looking towards the normal sources, and they're not just believing what they've been told anymore. So, and then that's women as well. Women are starting to feel comfortable standing up for themselves, and know that in order to effectively stand up for themselves, they have to stand with each other.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's fascinating. We'll have to, I'd love to have you back on the podcast, but not as music, but to discuss this actually, because I think it's a very, very, very important subject. And as you say, it could have sort of worldwide ramifications. It's really, really interesting. We'll have to arrange that. You have to come back on and we'll talk about this properly in detail, because I think it's an extremely important topic. But just to finish this up, back to you. I mean, so we've got Mr. Neverman is out. Rudy's been out. You're doing something with Kumar, aren't you? My friend, yes. Friend of the podcast, Kumar. You're doing something with him.
Yes, we have a really nice song in the works. It's just Kumar has been on tour. Turned big celebrities, so we need to finish it. No, I'm just joking. But he's stepping out. But it's a really, really pretty song. Like, it's a love song. I love it. Yeah. And I'm so happy to work with him, because I remember he was at one big Raging Fire concert, and I approached him like in my journalist mode. I walked up to him straight and I was like, "Hey, I'm a singer and I would love to do a song with you. And I know that you don't know me, but I think you'd really like my voice." And he kind of looked at me like, "What?" Like, he was so confused. And then years later, Neverman and No Fame came out, and he was like, "Okay, I get it." And he came back to me and he's like, "Do you want to do a song?" And I was like, "Yes, I told you from back then I wanted to do a song."
Oh, he's lovely though. He's such a nice guy. He's great. And very, very talented. And I have to ask, EP at some point this year, maybe? Album, maybe? At least an EP, possibly, please?
Definitely an EP.
Hey.
I don't do an album yet. I feel like an album for me, like, I'm a Virgo and I'm an overthinker. And like, I feel like my album has to be like something different. Like, it has to be some real special. I can't curse, and I curse like a sailor, but you know what I mean. It has to be something dope. But the EP, I'm going to have enough for like 3 albums, to be honest. The EP is going to be coming. I think I actually have a name for it already. I think it's going to be called Love in a Plastic Cup.
Oh, wow. Excellent.
Love in a Plastic Cup. Yeah.
Well, Zaya Benjamin, will you please come back on the podcast when your EP drops, and we will discuss that more?
Absolutely. Definitely.
It has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. I've really, really enjoyed it. And you're absolutely... If I'd have known you were a journalist before I did this, it probably would have put me more on edge, actually, because I would have been like, "Oh, God, I've got to do this all properly now."
No. Come on, man. I'm chill. I just like to talk the things and allow people to talk the things.
Of course, but it's, I mean, you are exquisitely talented. As I said, your voice is divine. Your lyricism is out of this world. Musically, you're brilliant. And the video to Mr. Neverman is just gorgeous as well. But moreover, you're absolutely fabulous. It's a real treat to speak to you. Zia Benjamin, for the moment, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me and for allowing me to, you know, be my mad self and talk the things to you and cause up trouble.
Mad is great. For the minute, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Big up, everybody. Bless.
Wow. Zia Benjamin, she is amazing. What a fantastic artist, and to be honest, thinker as well. Absolutely fascinating insights from her, and she will have to come back on the Topple Uncaged podcast. But for the minute, here is her latest track, the one that we discussed at the start of the episode. It is absolutely fantastic. I hope you enjoy this. It is Mr. Neverman. Here's Zia Benjamin with Mr. Neverman.
You should have spent some time before slipping away. Yeah, my baby, my heart, don't you know I could free you? Them yellow waste your time, boy, you should be with me. Yeah, come on, let me drive you crazy. Let me make it hard to leave. Kiss me like you breathe me, baby. Don't leave me like no summer breeze. Do it. Don't wait. Time is slipping away. Never, never mind. Do it. Wanna tell him, don't wait. Time is slipping away. Was just a little child, you never looked my way. Yeah, I'll keep you wild like a light to the night with you. Are you so damn blind like you don't see me? Yeah, come on, make me drive you crazy. Let me make it hard to leave. Kiss me like you breathe me, baby. Don't breathe me like no summer heat. Do it.
And that's it. Another music special of Topple Uncaged is done. I'd like to thank my fantastic guest, incredible Zia Benjamin. Follow her on Twitter, it's at Zia Benjamin. As always, behind the scenes, thanks to the love of my life, the gorgeous Nicola Jeffrey. Follow her on Twitter, it's at Nicola C. Jeffrey. Thanks to my man in the booth, sound engineer Gav Paws. Follow him on Twitter, it's at Paws with a Z Radio. And last but not least, thank you to my in-house singer, it's Ray Star Music. Follow her on Twitter, it's at Ray underscore star 113. Thanks to the Canary for uncaging me. I will see you very soon.
Uncaged.